Hello, this is Guillaume Veillette, the editor of Radio Free Nintendo. Unfortunately, I've been using a different laptop to record these past few weeks, and I have forgotten to deactivate a certain Skype setting that screwed up my audio in a way that I cannot fix. I speak quite a lot at the beginning of this new business segment, and if you find that you cannot stand it, you can always skip forward, although you would be missing on some great content. And for everyone else, thanks for your patience and understanding, and I will try to fix these problems for the next episode. Please enjoy.
Hey everyone, and welcome to Radio Free Nintendo. This is episode 343. I'm your host, Jonathan Metz, and with me, as always, are James Jones.
So hot.
The internet's favorite, James Jones.
I am the internet's favorite.
That's right. Also, Guillaume Veillette.
My mom's favorite.
And mine. And of course, hip hop's favorite, John Lindemann.
Also, your mama's favorite.
Even he doesn't agree with that statement.
We are here to tell you about Nintendo. That's our job. I'm actually only going to be on the first part of the show. I got to get going. I got a lot of shit going on this weekend. But James is going to be in charge after I leave. So hold on to your butts. And we'll find out later what he's planning to do for the second segment.
Find out what I'm planning to do when I find out what I'm planning to do.
Yeah. Since it's episode 343, I thought we would start off by talking about Halo. Guillaume, you're up first.
Halo means a lot to me. We're not going through with this.
It means driving into rocks because the cars don't handle it all.
No, I have been, no, I haven't been playing much this week. But last Friday, I came home and, I turned on the 3DS and I realized, oh, I've got like 5 street passes. And I thought, this is a sign. This is a sign that I should be paying for these new Street Pass games and that I'm going to be enjoying them. So yeah, like I wasn't planning it. Like I thought, like, wow, $5 each, isn't that a little bit much? Like I would never pay $5 for Find Me 2 or anything, you know? But they turned out pretty well.
Yeah, these are to, I mean, I thought the same thing. And I bought a couple of them. I bought Mii Force and, Mystery Manor,
mm-hmm.
basically from Don Koopman's impressions of them primarily, because he's the one I'd heard talk about them the most on Connectivity and Famicast.
Right.
But I'm interested to hear what you think. But my impression is these games are far, far more fun and entertaining and in-depth and more like real downloadable games.
More gamey.
Than the stuff that originally came with Street Pass.
Absolutely. So I'm not sure. I think I'm going to go in increasing order of interest and goodness.
Goodness. Wholesomeness.
As opposed to evil.
So we're going to start with a flower one, whatever it's called. Not very good. It's designed. Oh, these 4 new Street Pass games are all designed by 4 developers that are not Nintendo that we know and love. Right. And this one is made by Rezo.
I was hoping it was Flower, Sun, and Rain Street Pass.
That would be epic. No, Rezo are the ones who made the remake of Ocarina of Time for 3DS. And I think I can kind of tell. Like, I think that I haven't played that remake, but you know, like they redid the textures for Ocarina of Time and like various, you know, aesthetics modifications to it, and it kind of shows up in this flower game because of any Mii game that's ever been made, you know, including, you know, the ones on Wii, on Wii U or anything, it's probably the most detailed, and it's really, really off-putting. Like these Mii's move, and, yeah. Anyway, so the flower one is really the most basic one, and you basically just water a flower. Every time that you street pass someone, they water the flower that you have, and eventually it blooms, and eventually whatever flowers that the people you are street passing with have will cross-pollinate with your flower, and that gives you seeds that you plant and that you you water, and then you get a new flower, and eventually you get like 20 freaking flowers. The end.
It doesn't sound much like a game.
No, yeah. Well, it seems like I'm unlocking more and more as I go, so perhaps there's going to be more to it eventually, but so far, nothing that I've unlocked would constitute gameplay. Just like, okay, now you can decorate your garden, and you can pay for, you know, like, garden decorations. Oh, look, like, there's this mall that opens up. You can work at, you know, you can help, like, the shopkeeper there. But then that I haven't really done yet, but I feel like it's not really going to be very involved. Like, it's probably going to be like, okay, like, choose a couple of things and a couple of menus, and here are some coins so that you can further improve your garden.
It sounds kind of like a Facebook game, honestly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, let's move on from that one. The next one would be, Warrior's Way. And this one is developed by Spike Chunsoft. Is Spike Chunsoft the people behind, like, the Mystery Dungeon games?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, again, that seems to explain the complete lack of strategy in this strategy slash luck game. basically, what happens in this one is that everyone that you street pass not only are added to your army, but everyone that they've street passed, everyone that they have in their street pass plaza, gets into your army. And then in a kind of like risk-like map, you invade one country after the other. And there's some basic strategy involved, but it's really, you know, like you've got this, kind of rock, paper, scissors systems where like archers beat cavalry and cavalry beats infantry, etc. And you don't know, like you can see how many troops of each the opponent has, but you can't tell which one he's going to send first. So it's actually like rock, paper, scissors. You know, like you have to guess, okay, is he going to send like this type of troop, and should I send, you know, mine against it? And it's really kind of boring. I, you know, if you watch, okay, these games, are being sold to you by like this cute little bunny who acts like a car salesman and who, tells you like, oh, I'm so glad that you asked about this game. Let me show you, some screenshots that I've taken, you know, and
it's so clever because he guides you through the process of buying them.
Yeah.
Like he'll give you information. He'll show you some screenshots. He'll say, do you think you might want to buy it? Would you like to check the price? Here, I'll check the price for you. Yeah. Oh, it's $4.99. Would you like to buy it? Let me tell you about this deal. If you buy all four of them, you get one of them for free. It's so well done. Yeah. And it lets you buy all that stuff within the Street Pass Plaza. So you don't have to like home out and go to the eShop proper.
I like that it feels like I'm going to check the price. Like, I don't know what it is. Hold on.
Well, but it's possible that it could change, James.
Yeah, I know, but I mean, it's a little bit of stage show,
like,
more than
let me check my iPad.
Sure.
I thought that was pretty ironic. He pulls out a tablet. I was
Yeah, that he has yeah, a he has tablet that's not a Wii U gamepad.
But yeah, like basically, like you can ask more and more details about the game until you're convinced and you actually purchase it. And eventually it told me about this, like you can actually spy on the enemy, I guess, to determine the order that he's going to attack. But I haven't unlocked that yet. All I've unlocked so far is different upgrades for my castle. And, eventually the castle, allows you to buy more and more troops for fewer and fewer play coins. So again, it doesn't really add to the strategy. It just makes the game easier. So that's pretty disappointing. And our friend Pandaradox, a listener, asked me on Twitter if the game yielded the samurai costume for your Mii. But as far as I can tell, you can't take that samurai costume out of the game. So don't purchase this game for that.
Yeah, I mean, actually, on that point, well, don't you think it's kind of a shame in Nintendo Land that there's no way for you to take all those costumes from when you play those mini games out? You know, like outside of just playing that one mode in the game. Because some of them are really cute. You know, like when your Mii dress up as a Pikmin or dresses up as Link, it looks awesome. And I was like, I wish I could do more than just play this mini game in this costume. I mean,
yeah, let me transfer the costume. Like right now, I've got a complete Link outfit. I don't just have like the hair and the cap, but I have like the tunic as well. And it's pretty cool. What can I say?
Yeah.
No, I definitely agree on that one. So those two, I would say, are the ones that you can skip if you want to save $5. And the next two games are definitely are the ones that you have, Johnny, and they're definitely the more interesting ones. So you've got MiiForce, developed by Goodfeel, the people behind Kirby's Epic Yarn, and this is
Wario Land Shake It.
And Wario Land Shake It, and this is quite simply a vertical or horizontal shoot 'em up. So and it's fully featured. And the way that the street passes work in this one is that the different colors of the Miis that you street pass become your weapons. And you place them strategically around your ship, just like you would like the options in Gradius. And not only that, but you can place one right in front of you, right behind you, or slightly at an angle. But once you've done that, once you're playing, you can press the L and R buttons and just move the weapons around.
Sweet.
So which is a lot like the options. I think it's actually in Gradius 5. There's one of the options that that you can set up when you're customizing your weapons is to do exactly that, where you can sort of rotate the options around your ship manually to shoot at all these different angles.
Mm-hmm. And so I've played there's a lot of levels. I don't know exactly how many, but I've unlocked the second set of planets that you can visit. And each planet has three levels. And already I'm running into really tough opposition. I've always had to kind of top up my weapon set by, hiring some more Miis, because I never have 10 actual people, street pass per day. But yeah, and despite having a fully powered ship, it's really, really hard. And I've run into some really complicated things. Like there seems to be secret passages in certain levels. And to get to special items that you need if you're a completionist and you want to get the top score, it's very well made. Sometimes in mid flight, in the mid level, that the game will switch from a horizontal scrolling level to a vertical scrolling one, and it just keeps you on your toe that way. I don't know, what do you think about it, Johnny?
Yeah, I think MiiForce is really fun, and it's the nice thing is I'd say the first few levels are really easy.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a couple of street passes that I got naturally, and then I spent coins to fill up all the other slots with people. So I spent a lot of coins because I wanted to try it out. And you mm-hmm. really don't need that many Miis. So
right.
You don't have to have a lot of street passes or spend a lot of coins in order to get through a level because they're not that hard.
Mm-hmm.
But if you do, they're a complete breeze because that gives you tons of firepower and also means that you can get hit up to 12 times before you die.
Yeah.
And that's not going to happen in these early levels. Maybe you need that level of, fault tolerance. Sorry to use an aerospace term later on. But, I think I got through the first three levels and I only got hit once per level. So I had all these Miis left over. And the only disappointment I have is that when you beat the level, all the Miis that you brought in from Street Pass or that you paid for with play coins, they all go away
mm-hmm.
and you have to fill the roster again for the next level.
Yeah.
And I can only think that they did that because they didn't want you to kind of set up a really good set of Miis and then blast through the whole game in the span of half an hour.
Mm-hmm. No, that's absolutely what it is. And I've been playing it the way that I suppose it's intended to be played, just once a day, at the end of the day
yeah.
when I check my street passes. I think it works pretty well. Right now, because I've got all four games, it takes me 40 minutes to go through my street passes now. That number is probably going to go down as I abandon the flower game and probably the army one. But yeah, it's pretty cool. Just it's a change compared to playing regular shmup where you can get really, really obsessive in trying to beat this one level.
I think it's really good. It looks nice. It has a bright, colorful kind of Twin B or Fun Zone. Is that what's it called? Fantasy Zone.
Fantasy Zone.
Yeah. Right. It kind of has that kind of a feel to it, but it controls tightly. The levels are interesting because they'll switch from horizontal to vertical. And sometimes there's sort of interesting geometry features that you kind of can optionally try to fly around and get an extra treasure, but then, you know, it puts you in, you don't have as much room to maneuver over there, so it puts you in more danger. Right. And just the fact that there's like, what, at least 12 colors of Miis. So there's like at least 12 distinct weapon types in the game, and they can all be powered up, three different levels. Mm-hmm. And they're placed all over around your ship, and you can rotate them. So it just gives you so many options for how to play through the level. It's really cool. And it seems like there's enough content there to easily justify $5. And it's something that, you know, the one nice thing I wasn't sure about before I got into these is that whenever you get a street pass, it's just like, if you street pass someone, you can get a puzzle piece from them and play Find Me. Well, now you can do those two things, and you can play Mii Force, and you can play Mystery Manor. It's like, you, every street pass you get, you can use those in every single one of these games.
It's now much more of an event.
Yeah, it was
so
kind
you
of...
get a lot more mileage out of... So it's great for us in the West who don't get street passes very often, because mm-hmm. now when you do get one, you can actually play for like half an hour off of having one street
but
pass.
But imagine what that means, like going to PAX.
But the thing is, I guess that you don't, you know, play all these games at PAX. Like, that's just not what they're designed for, I suppose.
Yeah, I guess. But, I mean, for me, that's the only time I get street passes.
Well, there's the new Nintendo Zone thing. You guys can talk about it later, I guess. But I think they're making strides towards doing it. And the thing is, the more interesting street pass games there are, the more likely people might actually carry around their 3DSs.
Yeah.
And the install base is growing pretty rapidly, too. Like, the NPDs came out today, and Nintendo sold 250,000 in America in June.
Yeah.
Like, the worst month of the year.
Yeah.
So, there's a lot of 3DSs. Like, I'm finding that I'm starting to pick them up.
It was all those people impressed by the 3DS showing at E3.
No, but it's just hitting critical mass. Stuff like Animal Crossing and, you know, Pokemon coming out at the end of this year. They're everywhere. They're becoming ubiquitous. I'm starting to get street passes in my apartment complex when I drive on the highway, you know, in hotels. Like, even in America, even in Colorado, I'm getting street passes.
I get them on the train.
Not many, regularly. But a few.
Very quickly, the last of the four games is Monster Manor. This one is developed by Propay.
Yeah, that's Yuji Naka's.
Makers of Let's Tap.
And ID the Kiwi.
That's right.
And that's the other good one in addition to Mii Force. In Monster Manor, basically, you are some sort of detective who gets trapped into this ghost manor. And turns out, you know, many, many, many people get trapped into that manor. And the ghosts have hidden the floors or something like that. It's really, really weird. You have, as you meet other Miis, they give you a kind of a puzzle piece. You know, they look like Tetris pieces. And so you have to place them on the floor of the manor in search of the exit of the stairs. The stairs will only appear once you've actually put the piece in the right place. But these pieces are different colors. And so when you chain together pieces of two different colors, there is a risk that you're going to run into a ghost that you're going to have to fight. And when they're the same color, then you form, when you form at least a 2x2 room, then there's going to be a chest in it. And then you can get like various rewards, including weapons or currency that you can turn into like upgrades for your weapons. Mm-hmm. And
you can get tickets for new hats and stuff too.
As well, yeah. And there's a lot of depth here. Like, it's not just about placing puzzle pieces to fill the gaps. The weapons can be upgraded, as I said. There's a variety of them. So the game really is kind of a loot game. And you can scrap some of the unwanted weapons that you get to upgrade your current weapon. There's different effects that they can have. Like, you can stun the ghosts. You can freeze them, which I guess is very much like stunning them. I haven't tried all the weapons yet. There's some that you can charge, and it seems to be like this weird kind of turn-based combat.
The combat looks, from if you look at a screenshot, it looks like Find Me, mm-hmm. but it's actually, there's more depth there, and also there's more skill involved with it.
Yeah, because you have to basically time, defending against attacks. You have to really watch their behavior. If you have a charging shot, you have to make sure that he's not going to attack while you're charging.
But the other thing is, it's in Find Me, the one of the things that really annoys me about Find Me, although I like it, but it's just the lightest of light RPGs, right? Mm-hmm. And the thing that irritates me is that, you know, when you get one of these rare and precious street passes in the wild, you know, your character might go up, attack, do zero damage, and then run off. And it's like, well, great. You know, I got nothing out of that. It all took 5 seconds. And the nice thing about Mystery Manor is that although it looks like Find Me, and the RPG battling is similar to Find Me in some ways, there's so much more persistence, not just in the weapons that you collect and combine and upgrade, but also just that your character gets multiple attacks and you have plenty of chances to defend and survive the whole battle. And with one play of the game, you might go through several battles. And they can all be different, and they're fast paced, and they're sort of real time, and it feels way better. I mean, I think this game is fantastic.
It's pretty damn good.
Awesome.
There's even, you know, like you upgrade your character, you can find, you've got an inventory of items that you can use at, you know, when you need them, which is way more depth that Find Me has ever offered. And you find upgrades for your health. You find these heart capsules that, you know, raise your maximum health by a couple of points every time. And what I find particularly funny is that Monster Manor has ghosts in it. So, you know, Manor Mansion, ghosts, Luigi's Mansion. It looks like they've kind of used the leftovers from the brainstorming session that they had for naming the ghosts in Luigi's Mansion. So in this case, instead of encountering a polder pup, I encountered a poochergeist.
Wonderful. But the game plays completely differently than Luigi's Mansion.
Oh, absolutely.
In fact, I might even say it's more fun than Luigi's Mansion. I mean, it's not as long of a game, I'm sure, but it's just...
That helps. Like
this combination of placing these puzzle pieces and trying to be strategic about that. Cause I mean, you're creating the hallways and the rooms and the doorways. Like you set it up based on the pieces that the street pass me's bring to you. So it's somewhat random, but it's also somewhat deterministic. It's also up to you how you place these things. And there's a good way to do it and there's a bad way to do it. And there's a lot of different possibilities that come out of that. But then you also have this really fun sort of RPG aspect to it that's not just managing menus and items and upgrading things, but it's also a fun combat system. And it's a weird set of things to be all mashed together, but it works and it's really fun and it's really addictive. And this is the game that as soon as I played it, I said, man, I wish I had a lot more street passes. I mean, you can use play coins and that lets you play it even when you haven't been doing street pass. But this is a game I just want to play more and more. This is a game I could totally like marathon. I could just lay on my bed and play this for 2 hours, but it's not really possible with the way that it's set up, you know, but it's that good. It's that addictive.
And all the games, like whichever one interests you, is like they're really recommended for the people who get at least a couple of street passes a day or, you know, a couple a week at the most. Because otherwise it's going to take you way too long to play through them. And, you know, purchasing, hiring Mii's with play coins takes forever because for each and every time you do it in each and every game, there's always this long intro and, you know, like they do something cute when you select them and it just wears you down very quickly.
Yeah. You can still hold down R and speed it up, but
yeah, barely.
They should really, I mean, if they're going to expand it like that, they should really trim that, streamline it.
I agree, but you're not really meant to hire 10 mercenary Mii's.
No, but that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like if you're in a situation where you would have to do that, it's not optimal.
That would be irritating. Yeah. But I mean, again, hopefully pretty soon everybody will be able to get at least a couple street passes every now and then.
So. Well, that's the thing though. If you go to PAX East, you're going to be part of like the street pass 1%. So I think you're going to be hiring them by the dozen.
Oh, sure. Yeah. But you won't have to hire them, you know, if you go to PAX East, but you know, I think it's so great that they're giving us more to do with Street Pass right before they set up this new thing that will actually let people get more Street Passes.
Yeah.
And also right before this handheld really does reach kind of mainstream critical mass where all of a sudden there's just a ton of them all over the place. Mm-hmm. And that's, it's awesome. You know, I mean, Street Pass is something that I feel like we got way into it early on. And then we sort of burned out on it because we kind of did everything, or at least we got sick of doing. I'm like, I certainly never got all the hats in Find Me Too, but it's so repetitive after a while. I didn't really want to keep going at it. And the puzzle passes are neat. I mean, the puzzle swap is neat, but it's not even really a game. It's just kind of a collection thing that you just kind of burn through. But the fact that they're giving us these games, because the retail games have not done a great job. Like I even like Animal Crossing. I don't think the Street Pass features all that great in it. But they're giving us this stuff and it's really fun and it really makes you want to get Street Pass all over again. It's very, very smart. I'm just so thrilled about it.
Yep.
Okay. So John is up next with a very exciting announcement.
I played Wii U.
Wait, that's the announcement?
That's the announcement.
Did you buy one?
In my life, that's an announcement. With in terms of me and the Wii U, that's an announcement.
It's a big
deal.
Yeah,
so I happened to wander into a Best Buy. This says a lot of things. It says how often I go into Best Buy or like any kind of game store like that. Pretty much all of my game retail anything is on Amazon, right? So I very rarely ever have any reason to go into a Best Buy. So, but I just happened to be running other errands over the weekend and I was in a plaza where there was a Best Buy nearby. And so, you know, I had some time to kill. So I'm like, hey, I'm going to go into Best Buy and check out and just see kind of what's in there, right? And lo and behold, they had a Wii U set up on a big, nice HDTV, so it was looking great. So I figured, hey, what the heck? I will play Wii U. And I realized, you know, it was funny because it actually struck me while I was sitting there. You know, I start playing it, and I'm like, holy shit, I have never played a Wii U before. You know, because I feel like I've heard about it so much, heard about it, you know, from E3, from you guys, all that kind of stuff, like your opinions of it sort of thing. And I've kind of, you know, formed my opinion sort of not really ever touching it really. So it was really weird because I almost walked up to it. I walked up to it kind of like sort of like I knew about it. Like, oh, yeah, it's a Wii U, whatever. I'll play it, you know, whatever. And I picked it up and I was like, holy shit, I've never actually played with the controller, held it in my hand, actually played a game on it before ever. So it was pretty cool. And so that I played through the first... The demo was two levels of New Super Mario Bros. U, which I really enjoyed. I thought that was really fun. I really liked playing it. It was really nice playing it in HD. It was really, really cool.
Yeah.
I really liked the detail on the characters. Not detail, but just, you know, they can just kind of make the characters more expressive. Like a lot of the enemies are more expressive. Like in the part that I played, you know, you go against, it's probably, I'm assuming it's right at the start. And you know you're playing against kind of the raccoon enemies that fly around the screen, and I think you bop them on the head, and you get the raccoon suit, and you can fly around. And I really didn't know what I was doing, but that's the thing. I sat there and I you know,
it's not a raccoon, it's a flying squirrel.
Whatever, Tanuki, right? Am I right?
No,
I was totally wrong.
No, Tanuki is yeah, that's a different animal.
Yeah, okay, but
also that's racist.
Moving right along. So, you know, but I made sure I tried to, you know, walk around and kind of explore, and there's a lot of ways to explore. That's what I liked about it. There's a lot of hidden things. It seemed like there was more hidden things than in other Mario games I've played lately. So that was a lot of fun, and I got to actually, like, you know, the controller was very interesting for me because the way they had the demo kiosk set up was, I'm sure you guys have seen this. It's nothing. I mean, it was pretty old because one of the games that they had was Aliens Colonial Marines on there. So that was certainly hasn't been updated. So, but it's, you know, it has like a kind of a scroll wheel of games that you can go through, and you can choose whether or not you want to play a video or actually play the demo. They didn't have many demos. I think the only demo they had there was New Super Mario Bros. U. So I looked through. I was hoping they had one for Monster Hunter, but they didn't have that. They just had a video. So I watched a little bit of that. Looked really good. The video looked really good. But, you know, unfortunately, I didn't get to play it. I would have really liked to have played it. But I was really actually impressed by the screen. I thought the screen looked really good, really, really sharp. I really didn't, you know, because I've heard, you know, kind of people talking about the screen, saying, oh, well, it's not as good as an iPad. And, you know, the screen is kind of, you know, it's kind of, you know, you have to press really hard to touch it and stuff like that. But I thought it was really good. In fact, you know, I had to back off a little bit because I found I was turning the scroll wheel a bit too fast. Like I was clicking on stuff a little bit too much. So that kind of surprised me.
Yeah, I don't know. Like the people who say you have to really touch the pad hard, I think they've probably got a busted gamepad.
Yeah.
John, were you using the stylus or your finger?
My finger.
Really? And you felt the finger was too sensitive?
Yeah. I mean, I certainly didn't feel like I had to sit there and really press really hard to get anything to happen at all.
It's not that you have to press too hard. It's that it is possible to touch it and it not react at all because you didn't push hard enough.
Yeah.
So that's a different complaint, but it is a real complaint and it's very repeatable.
Yeah. Mm. Again, I used it for a very short time. So, and also with a very restricted app in terms of what it was doing. So.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Hey, the gamepad is not horrible. I don't think anybody thinks the gamepad is horrible.
No. Now, I
don't know that it's as good as it should be, but that's different. Yeah. You know, it's
now one of my first impressions, to be totally honest, is that it felt sort of cheap. And it felt kind of clunky. It was really weird, you know, because all my console gaming, obviously, right now is either with, you know, with very light controllers, like either like, you know, the Wii U, you know, the Wii Remote with a nunchuck, or, you know, even like the PS3 controller is really, really light. Xbox controller's a bit chunkier, but I'm kind of used to that form factor. So holding, you know, the gamepad, it just felt kind of big. Like it was just kind of a weird feeling in my hands. I got used to it, but it was kind of a weird, kind of a new feel to playing consoles with a controller that big, right? Especially a game like Mario Brothers U, where it plays like any normal console game that you would control with a normal controller, right? Mm-hmm. So that was kind of weird.
I agree. That's part of why I've been playing you know, I finished up Mario and I've been playing the Luigi download content with my controller Pro because the gamepad works fine, but the Pro is just, it's more comfortable. So unless I'm, you know, playing somewhere else in the apartment, in that case, I'll still use the gamepad happily. Mm-hmm. But if I'm playing in front of the TV, I'd rather just use the Pro controller because it weighs less. It's smaller. Yep. It's just, it feels a little more responsive. It's a little easier to grab the triggers and stuff like that. But, I mean, the gamepad certainly works and it has all the buttons and it has all the joysticks. So, I mean, it's lacking nothing, but it's a bit bulky.
Yeah.
Like you said.
Yeah. It's a bit bulky. And so, you know, I don't know if it was because, I mean, obviously this thing has been used by thousands of people, no doubt, in its lifetime, but
thousands. But, oh, you mean that specific
at the Best Buy,
demo unit?
No, I mean,
oh, I thought you were making a crack on Wii U's install base.
No, but it's sad that you could actually take it there. But yeah, I was going to talk about the gamepad joystick. And the gamepad joystick, it just, I wish it was a bit firmer. Now, it just didn't feel like it was very, like springy. Like I really like more springy joysticks than this. It didn't feel too springy. It just felt kind of a little bit loose, and I don't know if that was because, you know, this has been used so many times and kind of beaten up, or if that's just the way that the gamepad is in terms of joystick feel. But overall, yeah, I mean, I was impressed by it. I enjoyed it. You know, I mean, does it make me want to rush out and buy one? Not immediately, but I can't say that I came away from it saying, this is a piece of crap. I don't know why anybody buys this. No, in fact, I was like, hey, it's pretty cool.
Oh, I know you and Neil were kind of mentioning on Twitter today that you have an unopened copy of Earthbound that could easily finance the purchase of a Wii U.
Yeah, because
how seriously are you thinking about that?
I don't know. See, I mean, my response to Neil was, you know, that sounds like a good idea, and that's probably why I'm not going to do it. Because this was the copy of Earthbound that I really never played. I still have yet to play through that game. I bought that game at Walmart down in Florida, like shortly after it came out when it was in a bargain bin. I got it for $15, and that thing's still in the box. Like, I mean, it's opened.
I paid even less than that right before this podcast to download it on my Wii U.
That's exactly it, right? So, Yeah, but I mean, this thing, and it's funny, it's just one of those things where I'm just like, oh yeah, you know, I have a copy of Earthbound. I never really thought about it. And I always knew it was a sought after game, but I looked at, because, I figured that, you know, the ones that you hear, you know, on eBay going for, you know, $500 and stuff like that, I always figured that it would be some, you know, something pristine and in perfect shape. And, but I mean, if you look on eBay, just the cartridge was going for like $80.
Oh, I sold mine for almost $200.
Yeah, like
just the cartridge.
It's holy crazy. Shit.
That, and I mean, that I bought used from GameStop in the 2000s.
Yeah, that just blows my mind. I mean, and in my copy, I mean, maybe the box is a little bit dog-eared, maybe from just kind of just being kind of shuffled around over the years, but no major damage to it or anything like that. And I mean, as far as I know, it's, I really didn't take anything out and play with it very much. So, the strategy guide still should be in there in perfect shape. I mean, all of manuals, everything. I mean, it's just like, I basically bought it in a bargain bin at Walmart and brought it home and pretty much never played it and just put it on the shelf. So
you might want to get it graded.
Yeah, I probably should get it graded. It's like, worthwhile.
It's, if it's in that good a condition, then the kind of people who would want to buy something in that kind of condition are the kind of people who would actually care about it getting a good grade.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
And it'll cost you some money to do it, and once you do it, it's sealed, and you can't open it anymore.
Yeah, but...
And the person buying it knows that, and either they're okay with that, or they just want to know that it's good grade, and then they'll crack it open themselves when they get it.
Yeah, but, I mean...
That's on their
And the
head,
thing is,
but...
I don't particularly care about not having that to play anymore. I mean, if I can get, I mean, because to me, it was never really like, I didn't buy that. I mean, I bought that thing back before anybody cared about that game. So it was never really to me like I had to have that game. I was like, oh, I actually remember buying it. I remember looking at it and it was in like one of those, it was in one of those bins, you know, that they just dump a whole shit ton of games into like a square box out in the middle of a walkway. You know, like in Walmart, you know, where they're just like, man, we just got to get rid of these. And they,
yeah, bargain bin.
Yes, I mean, it's not even on a shelf. It was just tossed in with like a whole bunch of other games. And I was just like, oh, that looks cool. Wow, $15. Okay. And I just picked it up, didn't think anything of it. I just thought I'd take a chance on it. And all of a sudden, it became this huge cult game. I didn't even realize it would be worth as much money as it is. So
all of a sudden, like overnight in like 15 years.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, there was a certain point where that game just reached critical mass and became this darling. Because back when it was released, no one gave a shit about that game. No one cared about it.
Right.
No one cared about it. That's why it was so cheap, because it bombed.
Absolutely true.
Walmart couldn't get rid of it.
I think they're gonna sell more copies of it on Virtual Console and probably ultimately make more money on the Virtual Console release than they ever did on the physical release in America.
I agree. I mean, if you think that game was some super huge popular sought after item, that is revisionist history at its finest. Because Walmart, for $15, I mean, that game, I mean, that's a game in like the big box with the guide built in. You're like with the guide, like packed in with it. I mean, Nintendo was going above and beyond with that packaging, and they were just like Walmart was just like, get this fucking thing out of here. Just get it away from it. Mm-hmm. Just get it off our shelves.
Sometimes I think that perhaps a big box and everything made it seem even more weird. No?
Yeah.
Like I saw that box and I was just like, what is the deal with this game?
Yeah.
Do I even want it?
It also makes it look more expensive even though it wasn't.
Yeah.
Well, now that was part of the reason why I bought it, because I was just curious about it. I'm like, why does it have this huge box? Like, what's so different about this game? You know? So, yeah.
You're smarter than most,
yeah,
John.
So I mean, I don't know. So it's tempting. But see, the thing is, now I'm caught in this kind of twilight where I'm like, are they going to drop the price? What's going to happen? It's like I'm in this game of chicken with Nintendo now. Are you going to drop the price? Should I buy one? I kind of want to buy one, but I don't know if I want to buy one, because if you drop the price, then I'll feel like an idiot. Are you going to bundle something? Let's wait for Christmas. Ooh, but I don't want to wait for Christmas because I want to play Earthbound. I don't know. So,
well, it certainly does look that they're not going to drop the price until Christmas, if then, right?
Yeah.
So what you should – and they're – when they do it, it's probably going to be like $50, right?
Yeah.
So what you need to ask is it worth $50 for you to wait 4 months to buy a Wii U?
Yeah, probably. At the moment. You know, I mean, at the moment,
like,
it's...
Do you value your $50 enough to wait? And, you know, do you have other things you want to play right now? How bad, you know, how urgent
you
feel
know the answer
need?
To that, Johnny. Do you have other things to play, John? Can you hold off? Can you hold off for 4 months? I know you don't have many games in the backlog, buddy, but... If you can just sacrifice for once in your life. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
if you go to the third row deep, you might find one you haven't played yet.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, in summary, my experience at Best Buy, you know, I'm kind of looking. I'm on the lookout for cheap Wii U deals. On the lookout. I'm thinking about it. The seed has been planted, Johnny. That's the takeaway.
Yeah, that's the other thing. You have to wonder if Nintendo's not going to drop the price anytime soon, are retailers going to start, you know, slashing?
Yeah.
Like, get this shit off the shelf.
Yep.
or will they take it upon themselves to do, you know, like Pikmin 3 comes out. Here's a game people might actually want to buy. Maybe we can sweeten the deal a little bit and get them and actually push people over the edge to actually buy a system. That'll be interesting. Before we move on completely from Earthbound, we got an email today saying it's obvious the next retroactive game should just be Earthbound. And I wanted to address that because, you know, there's probably a few people who've been thinking that. I think that's a bad idea for a number of reasons. First off, we've done Mother 3 on retroactive and it's very similar to Earthbound. Now, I happen to actually prefer Mother 2, or, you know, the game that just came out called Earthbound in America. I think that's a better game. I think it's more fun. It's more charming, but they are very similar. And, you know, our comments about Mother 3 would be, you know, there'd be very, very similar types of comments.
But
yeah.
A lot of people, including myself, have not listened to the Mother 3 retroactive because we did not play it. Then we want to avoid spoilers.
You want to avoid spoilers for a game that will never be released.
Well, who knows? I might get around to playing it someday. I don't know.
Okay. Sure. But the other thing is, look, it's an RPG and there's a demonstrable fatigue with doing RPGs for retroactive. And the other thing is, I feel like this is a game where, you know, so many people are going to be playing it anyway. I'm going to be playing, I just downloaded it. I'm going to get around to playing it probably in the next few weeks, playing at least part of it. And a lot of us are. And I just kind of feel like there's not that much to be gained. Like, part of the point of retroactive is to sort of turn ourselves and other people onto games that we might have missed. And I feel like that's going to happen regardless with Earthbound because so many people are talking about it. It's so cheap. It's so legendary at this point. I don't really think we need to do a retroactive on it. It would be fun, but
it already has a lot of buzz.
I think there's other things that are probably more deserving, you know? So, but what I would encourage is a shadow retroactive. If we've got lots of people, who listen to the show, who've heard about Earthbound for years and years and have never played it, send in your comments and we can read some of them on the show. I mean, I think that would be really interesting. I just don't know that we need to set up the whole structure for it and for all of us to play it and for us to set aside like half an episode or even two halves of two episodes in order to go through and give our thoughts on that game. We've kind of done that over the years anyway, to a large extent, but I am very interested in what other people think of it, especially if you've never played it before. So, you know, write in, send us an email and let us know what you think. I'm very curious about that. But as far as the actual retroactive and what we will be putting up in the poll, we will talk about that later in the episode. So anyway, let's move on. I'm going to talk about, I'm actually probably the thing I played the most this week was those Street Pass games, MiiForce and Monster Manor. And again, I really love both of those. I'm very excited about those. But in the interest of a little diversity, another thing I've been playing a fair bit of, because I've been traveling, so I had my 3DS, and I finally put in some decent time into Oracle of Ages. At this point, I think I'm about a third of the way through. I just beat the third dungeon. And I'm pretty close to getting to the fourth one, I think.
So are you revisiting this? Had you played it before?
No. So a long time ago, when they first came out, I borrowed someone's copy of Oracle of Seasons. And I think I beat it, or I got close to the end of it, but I never did get to play Ages.
All right.
And so I've been curious for a long time. I mean, I didn't want to play it right after Seasons because I was a little burnt out, you know? At this point, it's been a while and I've been curious for a long time. So I was thrilled that they released this on Virtual Console. I mean, I got it for $5, a game I've been wanting to play for over 10 years. And it's a really, really good game. I mean, John, you talked about it a few weeks ago and you were raving about
it. Yeah, it's really good.
I think it is very high quality, and the dungeons in particular, I'm a really big fan of. I think those little cutscenes that they do every now and then are absolutely beautiful. Like, I'm kind of shocked that they did that on Game Boy Color because they look so good.
Yep, they really change the pacing ever so slightly. You know, make things just a little bit more cinematic, just a little bit.
Right. That's true. But in terms of the pacing, that kind of gets to a little complaint I have. I think this game is a little too obtuse, to the point that there are times when the way that you progress in the game is that you just have to walk around the map until you randomly happen upon a square on the map where a like animal character, a talking animal, is there, and he asks you to go find his boxing gloves or something.
Yes.
And yep. There's no indication from the game that you need to go over there. That and it's meant to be kind of a surprising event. Oh, look, I was just wandering around and I happened to find this kangaroo or this red dinosaur dude. But there's nothing to direct you over there whatsoever. And in fact, the game might even be giving you clues as to what you might need to do next that are on a completely different part of the map that you just can't get to because you haven't done this whole side event with your animal buddy. So
yeah.
There's some of that stuff where it feels like there's kind of like event triggers that are really arbitrary and they're in places that you might not really be searching through. So I guess they expect you to just get exasperated and then finally just say, well, fuck it. I'm just going to go on every single square of the world map until I find something. And in that case, you will get it, you know, but like that really should not be the way to discover how to proceed in the game.
Yeah. I mean, that's how, like, that's why I wound up just going to FAQ files. I mean, the one that really stumped me,
right,
was, I don't know if you've gotten to this point, but you're actually, I'm sure you've seen Tingle around at one point.
Yeah.
It's, well, yeah. Trying to find him, like, so at some point, obviously, you have to go talk to Tingle, right? I got to the point where you have to go talk to him, but yeah. The clue that they gave me said, have you seen, it's something to the effect of, have you seen that strange-looking man? He's down by the seashore. He is nowhere.
Yeah, they actually call him an old man, which is funny,
yeah,
but it's not useful.
Yeah, I mean, they said it's something like he's down by the beach or down by the seashore. He's nowhere near the seashore. So like I walked down to the lowest point in the map that I had opened at that point that was by the ocean. He's nowhere to be found. He's like up in the mountains. But I guess the way that you're supposed to interpret it is that even though you're looking at an overhead 2D map, sort of, where he's at is a cliff overlooking the ocean. But how are you supposed to determine that? It's like a cliff overlooking what? The ocean that's two screens down? You know what I mean? And so I was like, so when I looked that up in the FAQ file, I was like, oh shit, they just mean go talk to Tingle? What the hell is that? This man by the seashore crap.
The other thing is you can see Tingle from the very beginning of the game. Yeah. You just can't get to him.
Yep.
And the thing that you just got previously is the rock's feather that lets you jump.
Yep.
But if you go to that part, like having the feather actually lets you get closer to Tingle than you could before, but it's still, your pathway is still blocked because there's a thing that you can't jump over.
Yep.
So my assumption was, well, it can't, you know, going to Tingle can't be the next thing I need to do because I clearly don't have the tools to get to him. So that directs my attention elsewhere. And what you have to do is find the damn kangaroo and then go dig up his boxing gloves. And then he lets you ride on him. And then that allows you to jump up this cliff that Link could never get up. And then you can finally get to Tingle. But you wouldn't even know that you should be trying to get to Tingle in the first place, nor would you ever know that the way you would get to him is to find this kangaroo that's like halfway across the map on an unmarked square because he wasn't even there the last time you showed up. He's just now he's being attacked by ghosts. It's just there's something arbitrary about the way that these events are sequenced in the game that I find very irritating. But again, I will say, once you're in the dungeons, they are so good.
Yeah, they're great.
The items that you, the new weapons and items that you have in this game are really fun to use. They're very, very thoughtful. The bosses are seriously challenging.
Yep.
In a very impressive way. And there's so much I like about the game, but it feels like something was lost in translation or I don't know what, but this is a game that I would be surprised if very many people got through this without help from someone, whether it's a guide or asking a friend, hey, what the hell are you supposed to do between the third and the fourth dungeon? You know, because the game is just really bad about directing you.
Yeah. They kind of make things harder just through pure obscurity and lack of hints. So.
I haven't played these since they came out, so I just remember not liking them as much as Link's Awakening. But at that point, you know, there was so many years of difference between those games. Like, I thought, oh, maybe I just have nostalgia for Link's Awakening. Mm. So, yeah, it's good to know that perhaps, like, there was a reason why I was feeling that way.
Yeah, they seem to kind of be from that school where it was like kind of that old school mentality where it was okay to leave the player in the dark and just to make things harder.
Yeah. You know? I think these games are actually as good as Link's Awakening. I mean, they're not as original because they blatantly abuse the template created by Link's Awakening, even though they are made 5 or 6 years later. But I think they're just as good. And the fact that they made, you know, Capcom flagship made two of them at the same time is friggin' ridiculous.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think Link's Awakening is, I don't want to say slightly overrated, but it has some flaws that I think some people overlook because they have a nostalgia and because that game is charming and it is extremely clever. Like, mm-hmm. It's easy to forget, but all that 2D stuff that Link's Awakening does that was sort of only hinted at in the original Legend of Zelda, but they actually, especially because of the Rock's Feather, there are entire portions of Link's Awakening that are 2D platformers that are really good. And, you know, that stuff is very inventive and is really fun and gives you a nice, variety that you wouldn't otherwise find in this kind of a Zelda game. And I think the Oracle's games do all that stuff equally as well, but there's also some stuff in Link's Awakening, like, you know, the fact that the overworld map is pretty small and it's quite a long game. It means that the world is very dense, which is a great thing. There's a lot to find on every single screen in that game, but it also means that they need to prevent you, or at least they felt that they need to prevent you from just kind of wandering to the far reaches early in the game. So there's tons of obstacles everywhere. And at any given time, especially early on in the game, the part of the map that you can actually access and explore is very, very small. And they mean for you to find the next thing to do within the span of like 8 squares of the map.
Yeah.
And that's a problem in Link's Awakening as well as in Oracle of Ages and probably in Seasons too. I just don't remember. And mm-hmm. I find that stuff to be a little frustrating because you go back to like the first Legend of Zelda, you can go to almost anywhere in that world, even from the very beginning, even without even getting the sword.
Yep.
So the fact that these Game Boy games are so constrained, and yet even within this very tiny space that they allow you to explore, they can still be really frustrating and obscure.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, because you're going to have, like, even once you open up the whole map, that also means that you're going to have to open your inventory 10 times as you get, right. You know, from one square to the next.
Right, yeah. That's a problem as well, but, you know, I do love the fact that you can equip two different items at the same time. You can use them in these weird combinations. I mean, that stuff is so smart. It's so much fun. So, I mean, I have a lot of adoration for these games. Maybe not as much as some other people do. I still think Link to the Past is the best of these top-down Zelda games
by a
long shot, really. But I'm enjoying the hell out of these, and I love that they're cheap and that they're easily available now on 3DS.
Just to touch on what you talked about with the items, being able to equip two of them at once and switch them around, I really liked the one puzzle where it takes that. Oh, they actually use that. Like, they wrap puzzles around you being able to use two items at once in different combos.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And, like, that one puzzle, I don't know if you've been to the island area. I'm sure you mm-hmm. have, where it's actually one big, long kind of puzzle where you're swapping. You know, you have to go over here, and then you have to switch out to these two items so you can get this other item, and you have to trade with this guy to use this item. It's really, really well done. It takes you a while, but
very complicated and confusing, yeah. But pretty smart.
Yeah, like that's the thing. Like when you're in it, you're like, oh god, this is kind of a drag. But when you finish it and you actually complete it, you're like, wow, that was pretty cool. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, and you do. I do feel like you kind of learn something about the abilities that you have at your hand, because this island really forces you to use all of the items that you have up to that point.
Yep.
It's very smart. All right, so let's move on to the final bit of new business with James.
So it's Steam sale time, which is the worst time for your finances in general if you are a PC gamer, which I'm not, thankfully. What I did is I have been incredibly selective with the things I've purchased, and I've only purchased about 10 games, which is not very selective, but it's fine. It's so far, I have not escaped a single day where I haven't bought at least one thing. Just troubling in and of itself, but the thing is that the Steam sale itself, like, they'll put a game out there that's just an absurd price, like $4, and you're like, well, shit, I spent more on that on lunch. Done. It's the ultimate. It's like the ultimate impulse buy, and it's so much worse because Steam remembers your credit card information.
This is so easy.
Like, if I had to enter it, it would be a barrier. I'd be like, oh shit, fuck this. No, I'm back out. But I bought a few games. There's two I want to talk about. One real quick, Poker Night 2.
This is the Telltale game with all the random ass characters from other games.
Yes. Or in this case, TV shows. Oh. Or movies. Bruce Campbell's character from Evil Dead and Brock Sampson from the Venture Brothers. As well as Max from Sam and Max, who was in Max is just in the background being an asshole. Clapbot from Borderlands.
Oh, Claptrap.
Claptrap, yeah. Yes. And as dealt by GLaDOS. So it's a very,
that's
very
funny.
It's super weird. Like the whole, so I remember the first game, it was a really strange experience to play, but it was just a poker game, so whatever. This one's a little bit a different vibe. I don't know. It seems like they streamlined some gameplay stuff a little bit. You're just playing it for the interactions between characters. So you only get as much mileage out of it as it is until they run out of things to say.
Yeah.
In that way, it's a little bit like the other Entourage game I've been playing in Project Cross Zone, but that game continues to add characters to the point I have every single video game character that's ever imagined in the party. So in a lot of the same ways that I get the same, the gameplay is okay, and in Project Cross Zone it's a bit better than okay, but it's still relatively simple stuff. But I get that same kind of enjoyment out of it, of seeing these characters interact that have no business interacting with one another. Yeah. And it's managed in a way that makes sense. I mean, insofar as this can make sense. I mean, you see Claptrap trying to mate with GLaDOS, which was terrifying on a bunch of levels. So that's an enjoyable game. I got it for super discount. I think it was on a flash sale at that moment. And it's worth it for that. I really struggle for this game and its predecessor to see how it can be worth its book value. But if it comes up on a flash sale again and you kind of like these characters, even if you only like a couple of them, it's probably worth it just to kind of see, get the experience of these characters. And they do a really good job staying true to the source material. So it's good for that. So, I bought one really, really nutso strategy game because I do have a mind for that from time to time. But I bought a space combat game because I'm a sucker.
Here we go. So tell us, pick out one game to talk about here.
Yeah, one of those games, one I didn't mention that sort of grabbed me as I was going through the list of games that was on sale was Evoland, which, if you're not familiar with the game, it started out as a Ludum Dare game, which is these sort of like the events where game developers, indie developers, go and make a game in 48 hours. Like it's kind of a worldwide competition, not really competition because there's not like a winner, but event where the commission essentially announces the theme of the game you're supposed to make, and then you have 48 hours to make.
It's almost like NaNoWriMo, where you try to write a novel in the span of a month, and yeah, it doesn't matter how bad it is. It's, the point is that you actually finished it.
Right, and that's the whole idea. The whole idea is that you're going to make this game, and you know, a lot of them, that they just end there. I mean, like, they make the game, they're like, yeah, this is terrible, I'm done with it. And then occasionally, you know, it's an interesting game that gets evolved upon. You know, they take it out. This game started as one of these, and then they essentially built upon it to make it a release through whatever that Steam
Greenlight.
I can't remember what they call it.
Oh, Greenlight.
Greenlight. Yeah. This one, however, to describe it, using their own description, Evoland is a journey through the history of action-adventure games, allowing you to unlock new technologies, gameplay systems, graphic upgrades as you progress through the game, inspired by many cult series that left their mark in the RPG video gaming culture.
Oh.
Evoland takes you from monochrome to full 3D graphics.
I saw this.
Sounds pretty cool.
Yeah. I didn't realize this was on sale.
Yeah, it was. I think it's still on sale, but I got on a flash sale.
I'm about to wishlist this motherfucker.
So
wait, you, should I?
Oh, do it.
So this is.
I'm gonna live through you.
This is sort of the this. This is sort of the hold-off port. So the game starts off, it's like TI playing a game on a TI-83. I mean, it's like huge blocky-ass pixels. And you can only walk, like, the very start of the game, you can only walk left.
Awesome.
And then you pick up this really blocky chest, and then you can walk right. And when you get that chest, there's a chest to your right, so when you get that chest, it's full movement, so you can go up and down. And then the game goes from being a narrow band of visual real estate to being a full screen of this blocky texture stuff. And as you pick up more chess, other technologies come into play, like color and 16 bits of color.
Do you unlock saving at some point?
You do unlock saving at some point, yes.
That's really funny.
You unlock things like combat and enemies and just stuff, components of gameplay. It's really that base level of stuff.
I love the idea of opening a treasure chest and discovering combat.
Yeah. Or opening a chest and discovering traps. It's like the game now has traps. Congratulations. And you're like, well,
doesn't it kind of turn into kind of like a top-down Zelda game? It sort of looks like that at some point.
Early on, it's very top-down Zelda-y, and as it progresses, it moves up through the Zelda stuff. And it talks about it's a journey through the history of action-adventure gaming. Now, that is the second most completely nebulous genre next to parlor games that we have on the site for what the fuck's an action-adventure. But it slowly bends as time goes on, arcing invariably towards Final Fantasy VII. And it really does. So
that's not the ultimate destination I would have guessed.
No, it's not. To the point where it's cribbing elements of Final Fantasy VII to the point where you just kind of feel like, all right, game, stop. Stop. It's just kind of dumb. You can stop this now. But the issue with the game is that when it does the Zelda stuff, the combat's not quite right. You know, it doesn't feel tight. It feels like you almost can't, there's no knockback on enemies. So you hit them and they still hit you anyway. The expectation, I mean, this game trades on nostalgia. So the expectation is elements of gameplay would work the same way they work in the source material because it's clinging to them so, you know, religiously that it almost invariably has to, but you run into situations where, like, when you get hit and you're blinking, you know, normative game design would indicate you should be invulnerable, but you're not. You're still taking damage. It's things like that where you go, how did you get this wrong?
Is it possible that you missed the treasure chest that contains knockback?
Maybe. I mean, so at the end of the game, I had 85.9% of the items in the game. So I might have missed knockback. Hmm. But that would be a super bastard thing to do if they could miss knockback.
Now, how long did it take you to beat the game?
It took me, I want to say, about 3-4 hours.
Oh, okay. That's actually longer than I expected.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably about 2 to 3 hours if I think about it. I mean, it's not very long, but it's, you know, it's a quick progression.
It's $5
through,
right now, so I mean, that's fine.
It's fun when you pick up, when you get like the first time you get there and it goes from being a 2D game to being kind of an isometric 3D game. That's really cool. Or when you walk into a village and you get a chest and there's a thing called stores in it. And now you can actually go into buildings and buy shit. there's things like, it'll add graphics upgrades, it'll add things like anti-aliasing. Yeah. And you'll just see like a screen wipe. And as it goes across the screen, it converts the game world.
Is the game that it turns into something that you actually want to play though?
No, it's actually worse than the game that it started as. So this is what bothers me. It invariably arcs towards being an RPG of the middle to early PlayStation era. Yeah. So lots of precepts from late Super Nintendo RPGs wrapped into these static background towns. And it's when you're in a dungeon, it's Zelda combat, and then it starts to arc towards like Diablo combat, where it's just like click, 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 click. And you just attack haphazardly. But when you're in the field, it's straight up Final Fantasy VII, including the fact there's a guy who operates an airship and his name is Sid. It's like you've really crossed the line.
You found him in a treasure chest, too.
Oh, I wish you did. That'd have been amazing. But, you know, it's got more random, it's got random battles at the rate of, like, Skies of Arcadia on the Dreamcast. Which is a game that is notorious for the sheer number of random battles you fight.
Yeah.
Like, the GameCube version is bad, and it's got half as many. That's the levels of just bullshittery we're dealing with here. And it does get frustrating, because it's the same, you know, 4 or 5 enemies, because it's only like a 2.5 hour game.
Yeah.
But it wears on you, because it really, the overworld is just that. It's an overworld. You're going from A to B, and there's not much to it. So, you know, the overworld stuff really, I mean, it pads out the game, but it really just doesn't feel good. The dungeons feel okay. I mean, mostly what you're playing for is just sort of like the experience of seeing the game kind of like evolve as it goes. And that's fun. And I enjoyed that well enough. But I think from a gameplay standpoint, it's got some relatively significant flaws.
So, all right, man. Well, that's Evoland. It sounds like you're not quite recommending it.
No, I think it may be worth experiencing if you're really curious. Like I said, it's at most 3.5 hours.
You know, I want to say this game might be coming to Wii U.
Yeah, I feel like there's a bunch of games that were perhaps similar in concept that were, you know, kickstarted and had a Wii U stretch goal, but I don't keep track of what reaches the stretch goal or, you know, what these games are.
Right.
It's tough.
I mean, I will say that there's apparently a bunch of hidden content I didn't find that, at least according to the Steam achievements. So
okay,
maybe they're worth it. The stuff I did find was cool. So right. There is some exploration. So yeah.
Cool. Well, that's going to wrap up new business. I hope you enjoyed hearing about all that stuff. And now we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'll be gone, but the show will go forward and we'll talk about more video game stuff.
Johnny's gone, so the show has instantly improved. So welcome back. We don't have a lot of listener mail to get through, but if you want to send us listener mail, which we'd appreciate because we need it for this segment, otherwise we have to come up with things to talk about, and that's really hard, you can send it to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. But seeing as we don't have much listener mail to work with, we're going to talk about topics that we want to talk about, or that were easy to talk about, as the case may be. So first off, we're going to talk about the Nintendo Direct that went up, I guess it was today?
Mm-hmm. Yes, today? This morning. Yeah.
This morning.
Announced maybe like 20 minutes before they actually put it up.
Because it's just a YouTube video at this point. I mean, they barely need to be announced.
Yeah.
I mean, they're effectively just YouTube videos. So, I mean, there's almost no point in announcing them. Just, hey, just subscribe to their YouTube channel.
Yep.
Don't go to NintendoWorldReport.com, kids. Just subscribe to Nintendo's YouTube channel. But besides that, it was another pitch for Animal Crossing. We got to see Bill Trenton shake fruit out of a tree like a madman. And we got to hear about the features of the town of Animal Crossing again. It's been out for a month, so you probably already own it if you listen to the show.
Yeah, everybody on my 3DS friends list plays it incessantly.
But
I am absolutely swearing off of Animal Crossing. There's no way. I had one moment of weakness, but then I was like, I'm not even going there.
It's just too much of a time sink. Like, you can see everyone saying, like, oh, I've been online for, like, 70 hours. And it's just like, who has this kind of time? I don't.
With Animal Crossing? Man, I just can't understand putting that much time into Animal Crossing. But I guess it's just dicking around, visiting other people's towns and stuff.
It's a change of pace. Like, I can understand the appeal. Like, it's I don't know. Like, the game doesn't really require anything from you. It's just, like, it's inviting. We've already said this, but it's very, very inviting.
So Animal Crossing is a lot of, like, I don't like how my village is laid out. I'm going to cut that tree down here and move it over here. And then in 5 days, I'll have fruit again. I mean, a lot of it can just be like, whatever.
Maintenance.
Yeah, but then, I mean, to a certain extent, you can push yourself into these sort of extreme chaos of just, I'm going to make sure my town is the best town in the history of the world. Mm-hmm. There's things like you can breed flowers.
Yep.
I mean, it's not a system the game talks about, but there is a breeding system for flowers in that game.
Yeah.
And there is a golden flower you can get if you follow the breeding path that never wilts. But it's like 15 steps to get it.
I can see why Nintendo is still hyping that game because...
Yeah. And the game sold like 500,000 last month.
It's just dumb. It was just stupid. It's the stupidest thing in the world. How many games?
Yeah, it's reaches the point where it's it gets me curious when so many other people. That's the thing. Like so many other people.
Well,
have
who would have thought? You know, like back in the GameCube days, who would have thought that Animal Crossing would become some sort of killer app for Nintendo? Yeah.
Back when it was called, I think it was originally called Cabbage, wasn't it?
Cabbage?
Well, no, but I mean the prototype game that they had, I think, was called Cabbage, and it was supposed to be a quote unquote communication game.
Well, yeah, the communication game
before it was ever, that was the, I think.
Oh my God, you're right.
I'm pretty sure.
It was a 64DD game.
Yeah, I don't know why it was called Cabbage. Oh. I have no idea. But that's what it was called. And it's that evolved into the
Cabbage
original Animal
is the
Crossing.
Unfinished pet breeding racing game, a raising game, excuse me, originally intended on the Nintendo 64 disk drive, being developed by Shigesato Itoi.
Yeah.
Oh my god. And Tsunekazu Ishihara, which is the producer of Pokemon.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah. But that developed into Animal Crossing, did it not?
It apparently has a lot of similarities with Animal Crossing.
Yeah, because I remember them talking about it way, way back in the day.
And Nintendogs.
Yep.
Oh my god. That's weird. That's super weird.
Yeah, are we going to be able to finish the show with your mind blown like that?
No.
I don't know.
We're done. So that's the show for this week. Go play Cabbage at your local grocer.
So what else did the Nintendo Direct contain?
Nothing. No, wait, sorry. They talked about a bunch of games we already know about extensively.
I guess one of the announcements was that coming soon, in the next couple of weeks, they're going to implement this whole Nintendo's own Street Pass Relay thing, where if you go to McDonald's or Starbucks or wherever else, there's a Nintendo's own Best Buy, I suppose.
Airports.
Basically, their router, their Wi-Fi signal is going to store the last person that spot pass there, and it's going to give you that street pass. So
yeah,
it's going to multiply greatly the chances that you'll get a street pass, especially if you go to those places.
Yeah. If you work at McDonald's, you're going to get a lot of street passes.
Yeah, oh, yeah. It would be incredibly sweet to work like right beside a Starbucks or something. Well, actually, McDonald's would probably be better, but Starbucks might be pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of a weird thing they've worked out that I guess it's to give you the opportunity to street pass if you don't. Like, I very rarely street pass if I'm not at PAX or E3.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But this would give me the opportunity to do so. And perhaps this is Nintendo's kind of way to make me want to buy the street pass games too.
Well, yeah.
I mean, right now, I have no real reason to buy them because short of buying help, which feels relatively unrewarding.
Yeah, but also like the Street Pass has been implemented in a lot of games. Maybe not in Nintendo ones, like not in the Mario games or anything like that. But they are a big part of Animal Crossing.
Well, they've been in the Mario games, and it's also in Fire Emblem.
Yeah,
Fire Emblem. It's
yeah,
really
yeah.
Big
but in Mario, like it was just what like you get an extra mushroom or
no,
yeah.
no. In a,
that,
in
that
a,
can be helpful. That was actually
Super Mario 3D Land. You could get extra coins, the gold coins.
Yeah, but they didn't serve any purpose.
They unlocked levels.
Oh well, if you weren't already getting all the coins before. Anyway, yeah, I guess the way I played it, those street passes.
I like
Yom
implying here. He's got super skills. Well, if you weren't already getting all the
I'm
coins.
Not implying
well, what's
anything.
What's funny is you still had to get all the coins
he's
anyway.
He's just
to
stating the obvious,
stage.
James.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
But yeah, so like it's not just for those Street Pass games, but like they're really trying to leverage that as some sort of, the Nintendo difference. I don't know.
It's an added experience for the handheld to get you to carry it around with you. And if you carry it around with you, then you'll play games on it.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, why not? It's like it's the same thing. Capcom, also one of the things they announced today, was that they are bringing the Game Boy Mega Man games to VC. 3DS Virtual Console.
Oh, God. Yeah, that was outside of the Nintendo Direct announcements.
Yeah, but that was kind of like a stealth announcement sort of thing.
Yeah.
Which again, I kind of look at it. The reason why I say that is because it's sort of like the Street Pass stuff. It's like, hey, that's cool. Why not? Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Game Boy.
Well, if we're going to talk quickly about the Game Boy games... they're not too bad. they're inferior to the NES games, and they are kind of remixes, but you do get a couple of extra, original robots at the end of each of them. And Mega Man 5, of course, I'm sure, is the one that everyone is looking forward to, because it's the actually, entirely original one, where instead of fighting robot masters, you fight... Star Droids or something like that.
Yeah, something it's a pretty whacked out game.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, I don't really care too much about the Game Boy Mega Man games, but if they announce the Game Boy Color Mega Man Extreme games, done. But I'm in. Let's do this. Because those are actually, they're remix games, like the old Game Boy games of Mega Man X games.
Yeah.
And they're actually relatively faithful.
Okay, well, do you want me to blow your mind again? Twice in an episode?
Do
yes.
it.
Yes.
They have been announced.
They have been.
Oh, God! Thank you!
Yep.
So, yeah, they didn't put a timetable on any of these, like a timeline.
2019.
Yeah, it's probably going to take a while before we see them all. But yeah. Hopefully maybe all within the anniversary of Mega Man. I don't know.
What anniversary is Mega Man on anyway? It seems like Capcom's always telling us it's Mega Man's anniversary.
Yeah. Well, every
they
year.
Basically celebrated Mega Man's 20th anniversary until they could start conceivably celebrating his 25th.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they immediately started celebrating that one. Because it's Capcom. We like to pretend we care about Mega Man, so you'll buy the backlog. We don't really give a shit.
That's how we get you.
Capcom announcing and canceling Mega Man games since 2007.
While we're off topic, kind of, not really Nintendo.
It's not really a topic for the second half.
Well, you know, like, it's just, like, it's amazing how many, you know, retro games have been announced today, because Sega has also said they were coming up with their 3D remakes of Genesis games, you know, like Sonic, Echo, and whatever. I think Space Harrier is supposed to be one of the standout
Space
ones.
Space Harrier is the only one I give a shit about.
Oh, yeah. But apparently it's very, very good. It's a good port. It's the arcade version. And the 3D, of course, is probably as amazing as you would expect.
Right.
That
that's the one game where it makes any fucking sense of the three.
Yeah. Well, Sonic and Echo, you know, like the 3D works the same way that it does in the Nintendo's 3D classics.
Well, yeah, and it doesn't really make a ton of sense in those games either, to be honest.
No, but it's neat effect.
Yeah. Well, it won't be a neat effect to save the original Sonic the Hedgehog game. Because that game is that game is garbage.
It's my favorite one.
Oh, I'm sorry. Echo the Dolphin's not much better.
No.
That game does not age well. Sega, we don't make any good games. There we go. Done. Now I've pissed off two fan bases in one shot. Let's do it.
Does Echo have a fan base? Is it the same fan base that asks for water levels in Sonic all the time?
It's the same fan base that buys, like, Lisa Frank Trapper Keepers.
For the people who like maze games and drowning, you know, it's
like
the perfect
really,
game.
Really terrible mazes and drowning and blowing bubbles at whales, this is the game for you. Oh, it's brutal. That game is brutal to play. So the other thing Nintendo had, they had some trailers for some games they already had. They hyped up Wonderful 101 some more, which they told us like 3 months ago was going to get its own Nintendo Direct for some reason that I don't understand. So that'll happen. Look forward to that. They'll probably announce it after it's already gone up. And, I mean, is there anything else from the Nintendo Direct we want to talk about?
Well, there was, they ended on, you know, that, one last thing moment. Yeah, well, they showed a very snazzy trailer for, the Earthbound ROM that everyone can purchase now.
The Earthbound yes. ROM they did no work on.
No, they did way more work on that trailer, I can tell you that.
Yeah.
They digitized the strategy guide that came with it and then put it on the Virtual Console. Oh, Nintendo making dreams happen.
Hey, if we finally got Earthbound.
Yeah.
Some sort of downloadable
form. The first
form.
Email we get that says, this proves that Earthbound 3 is coming, I'm going to read your email live on the air. Your email address, not the email you send us.
So you don't think that if it makes enough money that they might... You know,
they have to put way more effort into it than they did to dump
well,
a ROM.
I will say, finally, they have a true barometer to measure the popularity of the series in the U.S. Period. Now, that's the thing. That's what's so interesting about it is the fact that now, I mean, it's grown such a cult following now that of course that game will sell a bunch of copies.
You see people on, you know, Twitter actually saying like, oh, well, now I have to buy a Wii U. I'm not sure if I actually buy that, you know, the idea that Earthbound is a system seller.
Yeah. But, you know, I did say, I tweeted today, I said this is the first time where I feel like I'm missing out on something on Wii U by not having one.
You're missing out on not buying Earthbound?
Earthbound is intriguing.
It's not. It's not. It's stupid.
I know you hate it, but...
I gave it.
You just think it's very average.
I played it to completion and felt that it was wanting in many ways.
No, do you think it was wanting because it, you know, it didn't really age well, or
no? I think compared to contemporaneous games, it was not. It lacked everything. The only thing I had going for it was that it's super fucking weird. But
it is super fucking weird, definitely.
I do think they spent more money on making the trailer for Earthbound than they did on making this Wii U ROM dump of it.
Right.
Yeah, I'm kind of unimpressed that it's $10.
Yeah, it does seem
that doesn't impress me. I mean, I kind of feel like all of this is, you know, sort of just complaining about something that's, you know, really, really a good thing. But
right,
$10 for a, I mean, at the end of the day, it's still a Super Nintendo game. I mean, come on.
Yeah, but it's supposed to be a good one. I don't know. Like, I don't like the fact that it's old doesn't really. I still see value in it. But then again, I've always been like, I don't need to be converted. I've always been buying VC games by the truckload.
Right. And whereas I don't own that many VC games. So for me, it's like Earthbound, whatever. Mm. It's like, you're going to have to do better than that. But yeah, I mean, this is one of those Nintendo Directs they just shove out the door. That, I mean, all the Nintendo Directs are marketing, but these are really just straight up marketing. Yeah. There's not really much news in them. I mean, they're just.
They recap just, the third party games that are coming for Wii U. They're the same third party games that are coming to Wii U that Wii U loved
2 months ago, almost.
Yeah, nothing new. Nothing really worth the Nintendo Direct.
Right. I mean, it was a total marketing thing, but that's okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what they want to use it for. That's fine. I mean, they don't all have to be news. So, I mean, I would ask for reactions to this, but only one of us has watched it to completion, so it's kind of a moot point. And like we just spent the last 5 minutes saying it's not really much. So I think that pretty much constitutes our reaction.
Yeah, but still made a ton of people happy. I mean, like the Nintendo Direct may not have contained any new information that we care about, but it did make the internet explode, or at least my Twitter feed.
It did. It did. Yeah, I mean, I was like, wow. So, well, but see, but that's the thing though. And when this is something, you know, people brought up on Twitter is, so you drop Earthbound and you really don't tell anybody about it? Like you just kind of drop it out of nowhere? I mean, they did. They announced it on the direct.
We knew it was coming.
But you knew it was coming at some point. But this pretty much caught a lot of people by surprise. The date.
The thing is, perhaps Nintendo is trying, you know, because I see like it's not really relevant to consoles, I suppose. But I've read some interviews with some iOS developers and the way they talk, apparently, if you try to hype your game too much before release, if you release a trailer before you release the game, you lose sales because people see the trailer and they're like, okay, I'm going to buy this. And then they go to buy it and it's not there.
Right.
So maybe with Virtual Console, Nintendo is thinking, same thing. Like people are going to see this trailer that we're putting out. Like we're making a freaking trailer for Earthbound. People are going to see it, so they're going to go to the eShop to download it. So we're going to make sure it's there.
We've had about 6 years of Virtual Console at this point. I mean, you think about it, it's been a while. And they've never really been actively announcing stuff.
No.
True.
So to move on to a different topic, although somewhat related to where we ended up on this particular tangent. So as I discussed earlier, and Johnny and I bantered about a bit about our Steam sale philosophies and the fact that John Lindemann actually has to go into quarantine during this particular time of the year.
I do.
It is Steam sale time. It is notorious for being the destroyer of finances. Mm-hmm. We're actually, before this started, another download platform, Good Old Games, had a sale where it was basically a fire sale, and I availed myself of that for a few older games, which if you don't really know much about Good Old Games, because it's a little bit under the radar by comparison.
Just stay away. Stay away. There's a lot of stuff there.
It's basically your childhood on sale.
I love, and I'm not saying that in a bad way. I love Good Old Games, but honestly, when they're like, hey, every single D&D game ever for $100, and there's like 80 games in there, and there's fucking Icewind Dale, Baldur's Gate this, Baldur's Gate that.
Oh, it's the dark times. It's the dark times for you.
There's been so many times when I've just been like, oh man, I just want to spend this $50 and get all of these fucking games because then I would have them all.
John's just screaming at his computer, take my money.
Yeah. And that's the thing. And I have some of those games. I mean, I have some of like the boxed. I got.
Oh yeah.
Like really, really cheap. I got like Icewind Dale, Icewind Dale 2, Neverwinter Nights Diamond Edition, and like Baldur's Gate, Baldur's Gate 2. I have all the boxed versions, and I'm like, it would be nice to have the digital versions, but I don't need them. I totally don't need them, and I haven't even played the boxed ones. So I'm just like, stop. Just step away from the keyboard. Step away.
You've got a box game and its sequel.
Yep.
That you haven't touched.
Nope. Exactly.
You're getting used to being on this show now, Guillaume. It's only taking you about a year. That's a year and some change.
So to really establish the topic here, we're talking about how digital sales make us feel. We're discussing our feelings.
I was gonna say that I bought a bunch of games I owned as a child when Good Old Games had their sale. Like I bought Pharaoh, which is a city building game based in Egypt that I hated as a kid. Because for whatever reason, it was on deep sale, and I thought, you know, maybe I just wasn't good at this game. No, I still hate it. But it's the impulse buy. These games that cost like a dollar, like $2 for a game. You're like, well, shit, that's a coffee. Right. I don't even drink coffee. And you're like, whatever, let's do this. And I mean, there's a season. I mean, there was the Good Old Games one, then there was Steam, and then the Xbox one comes soonish after that. Mm-hmm. And I know I'm going to make an absolute ton of impulse buys during this time frame.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
John basically has to give his wife this credit card and say, don't let me see it again. I mean, he has to go full on Odysseus here and be like, whatever you do, don't untie me.
That's the thing, though. I've kind of come back around, though, because now I've finally realized that I do not have time to play all of these games. And
that's
it's
the
actually,
thing.
It's not about money. It becomes about time.
Yeah,
for
right.
example, literally last night, at GameStop right now, you can get Ni No Kuni for PS3. You can get it for like $25. All right.
Nice.
And dude, I had it in my cart. I was just about
What's more troubling is that you had a cart at GameStop.
I was just about to order it. Hey, man, I go where the deals are.
Oh,
I don't care.
Oh, the website. I thought you meant like at a GameStop store.
Oh, no. I was on GameStop.com, but because there's a couple of coupons that you can throw in.
Okay.
They're like slick 15 and Saver. Put those in. You can get Ni No Kuni for $25, but $2 tax. So that kind of killed it for me. But I have a threshold. It's like, you know, that was one of those exceptions. Now it's an exception. I'm like, I would get this for $25, but it has to be. If I'm going to do an impulse buy, it has to be super cheap. Like
right.
$10, $15, that's it. If it's anything above 20, probably not going to happen unless I know it's not going to drop.
For me, that threshold's been like $3. Like I'm getting games for like $2.48.
Yeah.
And
but
I'm
see,
like,
but you're never
if
gonna,
I hate this
you're
game,
you're going to play them. You're
it's
never
like
gonna
if
play
I get
them.
If, even if I don't play them, it's $2.48.
Yeah, but
it's
that's like, where they get you. I
well,
that's
my
where
point.
They get you, man. Just having
that's my
it.
Point. That's where they get you. Which brings me back around to why doesn't Nintendo have sales on stuff? Because that is totally where they get you.
Yeah. I mean, I would, especially with Nintendo games. Oh my God.
If Nintendo
just
did like a week in the middle of the summer where they said virtual console games will be going on sale all this week, and it was like you could get out there and you could buy, I don't know.
I would
the
buy
first
like I would dude. I would buy the entire virtual console library. Why not?
Like if they just said Ogre Battle 64 is now $4.95.
Yeah, but okay. God. So far, you know, like the virtual console offering on Wii U is pretty meager. But they have been doing sales. Like they kicked it off before even they actually kicked it off with $30 games.
The 30 cent things. Yeah. And I think you know. I bought almost all of those things, and I didn't care about half of those games.
Yeah, 30 cents. Like, it's hard to say no. But then, you know, like, I realize, okay, do I need to play Balloon Fight again? And the answer
no,
is no.
I didn't need to play Balloon Fight the first time.
No.
But
yeah, well, the thing is, though, Nintendo games to me are different than PC games, because I would love to have the entire collection. Like, that's like kind of like that appeals to the collector in me. PC games and stuff, it's kind of like, It's more with me. It's more of a I'm curious about that game.
Right.
I've heard that game's really, really good, and I've never played it. And just to be informed
and
about that game.
I mean, like that's why Good Old Games is so much more dangerous than
it
Steam.
Is. It's dangerous because I'm like Baldur's Gate, man. I've heard that's one of the best games ever.
Because it's like, oh, I didn't play that game when I was a kid, but all my friends loved
and
it.
You hear about these games, and like you look at these like top 25 RPGs of all time, and it's like Baldur's Gate, Baldur's Gate 2, Shadows of Am, and all this kind of stuff, and it's just like. And it's just like, I should know, I should play this game, I should know about it, and experience it, but it's just...
It is worth pointing out that the eShop, to the topic, has had sales, but it's never really been this just everything must go fire sale.
Right.
Yeah.
And I mean, even the Xbox has that. They have it in the summer, and it's just, it's just crazy town time where stuff goes. I mean, it's digital. I know we got an email about our comment yesterday about, or last week, about $30 being effectively free money for Nintendo. So I was like, well, they have to maintain servers and stuff. Yes, but it's a relatively marginal incremental cost. I do wonder though, you know, are we going to a place where all the digital platforms start to do these really high end sales, because there's obviously a market for it and there's obviously publishers willing to do it. I mean, we see there are, you know, for lack of a better word, AAA games on Steam on sale right now that came out a couple months ago.
Yeah.
And getting deep discounted sales.
Yep.
Could we see stuff like that happen on disc digital versions of Nintendo software, Wii U software? Because, I mean, everybody comes out ahead if you buy that game digitally, except for the consumer. Nintendo gets a cut. They still get a cut. The publisher gets a cut, and they don't have to pay to ship a damn physical copy around. I mean, it's kind of a good deal for them. I do wonder, make a compelling reason not to have, you know, these sort of event level sales.
Well, I think the market is different, especially in particular for Nintendo, because I think a lot of the, I mean, you always talk about the long tail and these evergreen games. I think there's a lot more of those on Nintendo platforms. And sure. I also think that the market, the audience that Nintendo is trying to reach is not necessarily as price savvy as the PC market is.
That's fair.
You know, you don't have these people that are price hawks. You don't really, the people that are Nintendo fans don't necessarily sit there and go on cheapassgamer.com and just have, you know, set up a wish list of games. Not saying that I do this. Set up a wish list of games.
But my wish list has 148 games on it right now.
You know, email me if such and such a game falls under $30.
Right.
You know, not that I would know anything about that.
But the whole you know, price savviness is also because we basically haven't been trained to wait for sales.
Sure.
I mean, right now you've got everyone on Steam saying, well, okay, like this is on sale, but this is not a flash sale, so I'm gonna wait until to see if there is a flash sale. That's when like prices go even lower than they are.
Right, and if there isn't, I'll just buy at the very tail end of the sale.
So basically, people have been trained to wait like the absolute lowest of the.
But I mean, that didn't happen right away. I mean, I remember the first Steam sale.
No,
it wasn't that
no,
big of a
but,
deal.
At the same time, you know, like you've got Nintendo toying with various, you know, they're doing various experiments. They've got you like, okay, we're going to give you this game half price if you buy this other one. They had that with Kirby. They had that with Mega Man X and Super Ghouls and Ghosts. The problem with that was that one of the games was Super Ghouls and Ghosts.
You mean the best part about that was that one of the games is Super Mega Man X and Super Ghouls and Ghosts?
Amen, brother.
But that is a combination that makes me aroused.
But you
in
know,
every
like
definition
the,
of the word.
The point is that those promotions, I think, were perhaps more effective for Nintendo fans. You know, like more people, like they convinced a lot of people to actually buy these games because we haven't been trained to wait for like for the games to be a dollar. You know,
right.
Mm-hmm. So
I don't know that Nintendo would ever get to that point, but
no.
I do think that. The Steam sale, I mean, it's almost reached a point where the people who are its customers hate it, but they can't help themselves.
Well, the thing is, like, you get, like, a certain fatigue, or perhaps fatigue is not the right word, but at some point, like, you reach a saturation point, right? Like, I don't go on Steam anymore, because I, you know, at some point I realize, okay, I have games that I bought, like, at the... during the sale 2 years ago that I still haven't touched.
Five Steam sales ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when it gets to that point, like I probably could have picked these games up for even cheaper than I did during a sale, just because they're so old at this point, you know?
But I mean, for Nintendo stuff though, that may not happen. I mean, I do.
Yeah, but I feel like the
biggest part of the Steam sale isn't necessarily the discount. It's that all these things are happening at one time and make it kind of like an adventure.
I mean, that's one thing I think that Nintendo can really kind of harness in, you know, in a better way. And I think that Sony and Microsoft have done this to a little bit of a better degree, is kind of build that event sort of mentality, right? Like, because I think of, you know, on Xbox, they have, you know, the Xbox Summer of Arcade.
Summer of Arcade, yeah.
Yeah, and that's really, I mean, they're kind of generating hype out of something that's really otherwise kind of meaningless.
Right. You know? We've got five games that we paid money to have temporary exclusivity for, and we're going to put some stuff on sale.
Yeah, but I mean, it's very smart because people are like, oh, hey, well, it's, you know, it's time for Xbox for Microsoft to come out and, you know, announce like what games are going to be in the Summer of Arcade. You know, it's kind of like a big deal sort of thing. They've made it a big deal out of nothing.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And Nintendo really could learn from that. I think they could.
Yeah, they did something similar on the 3DS last year, right? They had, or 2 years ago now, where they had basically like the summer of Game Boy games.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean,
this is the year of Luigi, but, you know.
Yeah.
But I think back, a perfect example of what Nintendo did was around the release of Metroid Prime 3, when they had the summer of August of that year was they, for the whole month, everything was just themed Metroid. I think they released Super Metroid on the VC. You know, they did a whole
thing.
And that's
like the end of Metroid's history.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, stuff like that. I mean, you know, it'd be cool if, you know, Nintendo could pick a certain spot on the calendar and say, we are going to do something special every single year, because people always look forward to that, especially Nintendo fans. Love that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah, right. I mean, it's an opportunity to get excited about something.
I don't know. Like, I feel like, as I said earlier, like, I reach a saturation point at some, you know, if these sales happen too often, or if, like, I'm given too many free games, eventually I start thinking, well, I'm not going to buy anything anymore, because there's just a chance that I'm going to get something free, or that I'm going to get it much cheaper, or that I'm, you know, perhaps like I would save money if I paid full price, but at the exact moment that I know that I'm going to play it, you know? So like right now, like I used to be a big consumer of PSN games, but then PSN Plus came out, and what happened? Like now I'm just like, okay, I'm going to wait for this game to become free. And if it doesn't, I don't care, because I've got like 10 free games that I'm already like in my mind, like I have to get through.
And see, I do wonder if the PSN Plus philosophy is self-defeating.
A little bit, probably. But
I mean, you look at what Johnny did, where he basically, he bought a Vita for what, like 2/3 of its list price? And then for the Vita, it's not self-defeating because you have to buy their stupid, ridiculous, overpriced memory card.
Right.
But, if you can get around that, it's totally self-defeating.
Yeah. But even like Nintendo, I've seen some people say like, oh, I'm not going to get this eShop game because there's a chance that it might just show up as a Club Nintendo reward. So they've even got their own version of that.
I think waiting for Club Nintendo rewards is a fool's errand because God knows what they'll put up there. I mean, you could get like Pokemon Puzzle League up there and you're like, well, I took up that slot.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But at the same time, like I might have picked up, I don't know, like Kirby Star Stacker. Like, I might have. Like, it was, like, $3. But at some point, I'm just thinking, okay, well, I'm not going to play it right away. There's no hurry. I'm just going to wish this sucker. And eventually, if it's a Club Nintendo reward, I'll get it through that.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's what I do with all of the PS Plus games. I mean, I think on my hard drive, I downloaded Battlefield 3 just for the hell of it. Why not? I downloaded it, too. I played it for 5 minutes and I was like, that's cool. It's a first person shooter. I probably like Black Ops more. And I just moved on. I mean, that's the whole thing. What I don't like about having so many games, and I say this from experience, is that it honestly, after a while, like I've kind of reached the point where I have sort of like backlog fatigue.
Right.
Where I feel like I have so many games that I need to get through that eventually I just reached a wall and I just said, stop. That's why, like, all of these games, like, if I would have had the same mentality that I had, like, 5 years ago, I would have bought Last of Us, I would have bought Bioshock Infinite, Deus Ex, XCOM, all of these games that get, like, 80s, 85s, 90s across various platforms. But now, like, something comes out, and I'm just like, I just get fatigued just thinking about playing through it. I'm just like, it's just another game. Like, and I would love to play through it, but I'm just like, I just have so much other backlog stuff that, you know, I mean, I, you know, Dragon Quest IX I still haven't played through. Radiant Historia I still haven't played through.
Oh my God, like, John, you're Radiant
Dude, like all these amazing games.
Killing me.
The amazing games that I need to play through, and I don't want yet another one on there.
John Lindemann is going to be convicted of murder because he is killing me right
now.
I mean,
you know, and that's the thing, these games aren't going anywhere.
Yeah, so. And, you know, like the thing is, I'd rather have Nintendo perhaps like not do the sales so that I don't reach that point with their stuff. But the thing is, they do live like the Wii U is out there. Like it's not alone on the market. Far from it. And what I've noticed is that a lot of people just now don't think twice about purchasing several versions of games for several systems. You know, like they'll buy Walking Dead on iOS and, oh, like I got this episode for free on PSN. I'm going to get the rest. It's on sale. And, oh, I got, you know, like there's this Steam sale. I'm going to get this game as well on the PC just to know what it looks like, you know. And
that's nuts.
And, yeah. But Nintendo stands kind of outside of that. So it is missing out on sales. It is missing out on something.
Sure.
Just by refusing to kind of play the game. But it's, you know, like it's an interesting question to know if like that's a game that's worth, you know, playing for them.
Right.
Well, that's the thing, that the Steam sale is hitting people that probably wouldn't buy anything anyways.
Mm-hmm. Me. I mean, I buy one game on Steam a year that's not during the Steam sale. During the Steam sale,
exactly.
During the two Steam sales, I'll buy about 15.
Yeah.
And a lot of those are indie games I would have had no chance of buying anyway.
There's got to be a portion of the audience that, you know, would have paid full price.
Oh, definitely.
Absolutely. But still, I mean, you have a good chunk of them, though, that are just, it's money that never would have been made that they're now making.
Mm. Right. It's,
as opposed to people just pirating it or something.
Right.
Right. I mean, I think it applies much more so to indie games in this platform because
true.
They're games that don't have a lot of word of mouth, and that's all they have.
Yeah.
So you go in there. I mean, the fact that Just Cause 2 I got for like $6 is dumb. I mean, it's stupid.
Well, that's,
but I would have never bought Just Cause 2.
Well, it's just, it reminds me of the humble indie
bundle.
Humble indie bundle.
Indie bundle. It's the kind of same thing where that becomes kind of an event and people are like, "Oh, hey, well what games are in it? Oh yeah, well this game is in it. You know that game? Oh yeah, that's really good. What else is in it? Oh well, have you heard about this one? Oh no." It gets a discussion around it. So,
right.
Like you said, for these indie games, that's great because people start asking about games that otherwise they would probably just skip over.
So I saw a tweet from, oh, what was it? It's not Gunplay. Shoot.
Gunpoint.
Yeah, I saw a tweet from the official Gunpoint Twitter account. And it was just a chart of their sales on Steam. And for like 5 days, it was just a flat line. And I said, oh, we've been on sale for about 40 minutes. What's happened? And then it just spikes all the way to the very top of the graph.
Yeah.
Yep. And like they were a flat line at the very bottom. And then it shoots literally to the very top of the graph.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I mean, there is an argument to be made that this is a successful business strategy depending on the nature of your game. What I do wonder, though, is would having a platform like this make Nintendo's outreach efforts to indie developers more enticing? Because, I mean, I've seen indie developers basically licking their chops waiting for the Steam sale to start.
Yeah. Probably more for, like you said, more for word of mouth than anything.
Right, because they could price the game at that price if they wanted to,
mm-hmm.
but it's not part of an event.
Yeah, I'm not sure if Nintendo really needs to do mega sales to kind of get some more traction, give some more traction to the eShop. Like they did, they do allow developers to set sale prices, you know, by themselves. So that's an improvement over the previous.
It's definitely a huge improvement.
The thing is, though, like they need to kind of work with them to promote these sales because there's like it's very very possible that a developer is going to lower the price, and the only way that you would know about that is if you happen to read the developer's Twitter feed,
right? Or you're already in the eShop and you're in the little section marked sales.
Yeah. Like they need like a couple of smart things that other stores do, like Steam, and just like send you an email when, or just, you know, next time that you're on the eShop, notify you right away when you enter the eShop, hey, this game on your wish list, it's on sale.
And Steam has little pop-ups when you log in. Even if it's not on your wish list, you get a little pop-up saying, "Get Killing Floor is on sale."
Right.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, I still don't care. It's still Killing Floor.
Yeah.
And you'll close it. But I think, and this is kind of the point I was trying to make, what makes the Steam sale different is you don't have to promote the games individually. It's just there's so much volume that you instinctively turn your eyes towards what's going on the periphery.
Mm.
And you work your way through it. And I think while a developer could put their game on sale, I don't think it's going to attract the same amount of attention, even if it doesn't have to share the spotlight as it does in the collective nuclear bomb that is a Steam sale.
Right.
Yeah.
It's harder for Nintendo to do, though, with so few games.
It is. You have to have a lot of backlog to pull it off. And I think, I think that's sort of a cart and the horse thing, because they did it with early Steam sales when there were obviously a lot less games because it was earlier in history and that's how time works. But
thanks for the explanation, Professor Jones.
But you're right. It didn't get successful until there was a critical mass of games available.
Right. I guess that's where the argument of Nintendo should release all of their games on the virtual console, in one go.
There's a certain appeal to that argument of just put it all out there. Just go and just get to say that this shop now has a million games on it. This week we're putting 40 of them on sale. We're not even going to tell you what they are. Go look for yourself.
Right. But then there would be the risk of the indies just being drowned out by Mario.
That's the downside. Yeah. Because if you say, today's the Mario sale, every Mario game ever, 50% off.
Yeah. Well, on the flip side of that, you could sit there and say, hey, all indie games are on sale. And make it a big indie deal, The Nintendo humble indie bundle.
Yeah, make it say, every indie game on the Nintendo platform is now on sale today. 50% off. You have to go today or it's gone. Yep. And then people are like, oh God, I need to go today. And then when you go to the front page, it would have to just be about that.
Yeah.
It just needs to be a big wall of shit that's on sale. Cause I think what makes the Steam sale and the good old game sales and the Microsoft sales so intimidating and yet so controlling is that when you go there, the first thing you see is this wall of green tags telling you this is 50% off, this is 30% off, this is 20% off, 50%. You're like, oh my God.
It's just Nintendo works so slowly. It's been forever since they said that eventually you would be able to buy stuff on the eShop online, without going to the eShop. That's still not implemented. Like, you go to the page online for whatever virtual console game they've released. You can't click a link that says, buy this on the eShop. And what that gives you is a QR code. Yeah.
You know what the 360 or when the 360 is getting that? Minus 7 years ago or something ridiculous like that. I mean, it's been around forever.
I think Sony put that in last year sometime.
Yeah. I mean, the 360
this year, I think.
The 360 one was, if you bought it, your console would download it to be ready when you get there. That, of course, required you leave your console on all the time, which if you had an early 360 meant you didn't have an early 360.
Exactly. Well, it would depend on what part of your 360 died, right? It would depend. Did the board warp? Was it the graphics card that went?
Did the hard drive go?
Yeah. Maybe that one of the fans died, which caused something else to die. I don't know. Oh. There's just so many options. It's like the Steam sale of a shitty console.
Everything must go, literally.
If I have closing thoughts on this, it's just that Nintendo has a lot of... It has so much work to do on several fronts. Like, it not only needs more games on its eShop, not only does it have to implement sales that actually attract attention, but they've got basic problems with the way their eShops work that they need to fix. And they should do that all at the same time right away, but they seem to be unable. Like, today, because of the Nintendo Direct and Earthbound and everything, The press release for Virtual Console came out hours later than it usually does, and the actual update happened half an hour past the time that it usually does. Like, they can't handle even putting out a video on the internet.
Guys, there's a lot of stuff going on today. We need to get this together.
Yeah.
Like, it was too much.
It's like, there was a meeting on Monday with somebody had a checklist. All right, let's make sure we get everything in order for on Thursday.
Well, now, do you think that's because all of this stuff is coming from Japan and it just takes forever to coordinate it from Japan going over to the US?
I feel relatively confident NOA is running their own eShop.
Mm.
NCL is probably giving them all the orders they have to get, but I would hope NOA is responsible for at least pushing the button. This can go live now.
Well, they would have to only because it's on their servers, right?
Well, who knows? NCL could have direct access to their servers. I mean, shit, the servers could all be in Kyoto for all we know.
That's true.
The servers could all be at the bottom of the ocean. I mean, it's irrelevant, effectively. All right. So I think that'll do it for us in this relatively weird second segment. Again, Johnny's left us, so I'm going to go ahead and thank Guillaume and John for staying with us for this event of a podcast.
There were points where I wanted to leave, but you know.
But you can't. You were obligated to remain.
Yeah. I was sort of pot committed after about the fifth hour.
It's only on hour three.
Hey, who's counting?
So, Skype. So, let's wrap it up for us. Some plugs. I got to remember the plug order. Shit. What's the order of plugs? Plugs. Send us emails. rf@nintendoworldreport.com. Of course, that means there's a website called NintendoWorldReport.com. You can go there. Johnny's on a bunch of podcasts with people like Carl, who may be homeless. I don't know. Just based on his beard.
Yeah, the Crosstalk podcast.
With a W because Carl can't spell.
Other Nintendo World Report podcasts include Connectivity.
Yes.
And the Trivia Podcast, of course, with TYP.
Radio Trivia Podcast Edition with TYP. Michael Cole. That'll do it for us this week in the worst plug segment in the history of the podcast. I've been your temporary host, James Jones, with Guillaume and John.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening.
Please rate us on iTunes.
Please don't rate us on iTunes after this episode. Please wait till next week to rate us on iTunes. Good night.
Bye.
Later.
So, how much of a dick is Nintendo for making me buy Shin Megami Tensei 4 and then Fire Emblem, two long-ass games, and then giving me credit to buy another long-ass game, and they also release Shantae and Attack of the Tokyo Monsters? And
yeah.
Like, what the hell? All at the same time.